just a country of Dorethai believers, but a virtual extension of Fjordin itself. Once Raithen's bill passed, the priest would waste no time in arresting Serene and the others. They would be locked away, or, more likely, executed. After that, there would be no one to oppose Fjordin. The entire civilized world would belong to Wyrn, a final fulfillment of the old empire's dream. And yet, despite all of this, her allies debated and talked. None of them believed that Telrai would actually sign a document forcing conversion. Such atrocities didn't happen in their world. Eriland was a peaceful kingdom. Even the so-called riots of a decade past hadn't been that destructive, unless one was an Elantrian. Her friends wanted to move carefully. Their caution was understandable, laudable even. But their timing was terrible. It was a good thing she had an opportunity to practice fencing this day. She needed to release a little aggression. As if in response to her thoughts, the carriage pulled to a halt in front of Roile's manor. In the wake of Telrai's move into the palace, the women had relocated their fencing practice to the old Duke's gardens. The weather of late had been warm and breezy, as if spring had decided to stay this time, and Duke Roile had welcomed them. Serene had been surprised when the women insisted that they continue the fencing practice. However, the ladies had shown strength in their resolve. This one meeting would continue every second day as it had for over a month now. Apparently, Serene wasn't the only one who needed an opportunity to work out her frustration with a sword. She climbed out of the carriage, dressed in her usual white jumpsuit and wearing her new wig. As she rounded the building, she could make out the sounds of sirens clashing in the background. With shade and a wooden floor, Roile's garden pavilion was a perfect place for practice. Most of the women had already arrived, and they greeted Serene with smiles and curtsies. None of them had quite gotten over her sudden return from Elantris. Now they regarded her with even more respect and fear than they had before. Serene nodded back with polite affection. She liked these women, even if she could never be one of them. Seeing them, however, reminded her of the strange loss she still felt at having left Elantris behind. It wasn't just spirit. Elantris was the one place where she could remember feeling unconditional acceptance. She had not been a princess. She had been something far better. A member of a community where every individual was vital. She had felt warmth from those motley-skinned Elantrians, a willingness to accept her into their lives and give her part of themselves. There, in the center of the most cursed city in the world, Spirit had constructed a society that exemplified Karathi teachings. The church taught of the blessings of unity. It was ironic that the only people who practiced such ideals were those who had been damned. Serene shook her head, snapping her sword forward in a practice thrust, beginning her warm-ups. She had spent her adult life in an unending quest to find acceptance and love. When at long last she had finally found both, she had left them behind. She wasn't sure how long she practiced. She fell into her forms easily, once the warm-ups were finished. Her thoughts rotated around Elantris, Domai, her feelings, and the indecipherable ironies of life. She was sweating heavily by the time she realized the other women had stopped sparring. Serene looked up with surprise. Everyone was huddled at one side of the pavilion, chattering among themselves and looking at something Serene couldn't see. Curious, she edged her way to the side until her superior height gave her a good look at the object of their attention. A man He was dressed in fine blue and green silks, a feathered hat on his head. He had the creamy brown skin of a Dulladan aristocrat, not as dark as Shudin's, but not as light as Serene's. His features were round and happy, and he had a foppish, unconcerned air. Dulladan, indeed. The dark-skinned servant at his side was massive and bulky, like most doulas of lower birth. She had never seen either man before. "What is going on here?" Serene demanded. "His name is Kalu, my lady," Aishi explained, floating over to her. "He arrived a few moments ago. Apparently he's one of the few Dulladan Republicans that escaped the massacre last year. He has been hiding in southern Aerilon until just recently, when he heard that King Iodin was looking for a man to take Baron Edain's holdings." Serene frowned. Something about the man bothered her. The women suddenly burst into laughter at one of his comments, giggling as if the doula were an old and favored member of the court. By the time the laughter died down, the doula had noticed Serene. "Ah," Kalu said, bowing ornately. "This must be the Princess Serene. They say you are the most fair woman in all of Opilon." "You should not believe all of the things that people say, my lord," Serene replied slowly. "No," he agreed, looking up into her eyes. "Only the ones that are true." Despite herself, Serene started to blush. She did not like men who could do that to her. "I'm afraid you have caught us off guard, my lord," Serene said through narrowed eyes. "We have been exercising quite vigorously and are in no position to receive you like proper ladies." "I apologize for my abrupt arrival, your highness," Kalu said. Despite the polite words, he appeared unconcerned that he had interrupted an obviously private gathering. "Upon arriving in this glorious city, I first paid my respects to the palace, but was told that I would have to wait for at least a week to see the king himself. I put my name on the lists, then had my coachman drive me around your lovely city. I had heard of the illustrious Duke Roile, and decided to pay him a visit. How surprised I was to find all these lovelies in his gardens!" Serene snorted, but her rebuttal was interrupted by the arrival of Duke Roile. Apparently the old man had finally realized that his property had been invaded by a roving doula. As the Duke approached, Kalu gave another one of his silly bows, sweeping his large, floppy hat out in front of him. Then he launched into praises of the Duke, telling Roile how honored he was to meet such a venerable man. "I don't like him," Serene declared quietly to Aishi. "Of course not, my lady," Aishi said. "You never have gotten along very well with Dulladan aristocrats." "It's more than that," Serene insisted. "Something about him seems false. He doesn't have an accent." "Most Republic citizens spoke Aeonic quite fluently, especially if they live near the border. I have met several doulas in my time without hint of an accent." Serene just frowned. As she watched the man perform, she realized what it was. Kalu was too stereotypical. He represented everything a Dulladan aristocrat was said to be. Foolishly haughty, overdressed and overmannered, and completely indifferent when it came to just about everything. This Kalu was like a cliché that shouldn't exist. A living representation of the idealized Dulladan noble. Kalu finished his introductions and moved on to a dramatic retelling of his arrival story. Roile took it all in with a smile. The Duke had done lots of business with doulas, and apparently knew the best way to deal with them was to smile and nod occasionally. One of the women handed Kalu a cup, He smiled his thanks and downed the wine in a single gulp, never breaking his narrative as he immediately brought his hand back to the conversation. Doulas didn't just talk with their mouths. They used their entire bodies as part of the storytelling experience. Silks and feathers fluttered as Kalu described his surprise at finding King Iodin dead and a new king on the throne. "Perhaps my lord would care to join us," Serene said, interrupting Kalu, which was often the only way to enter a conversation with a doula. Kalu blinked in surprise. "Join you?" he asked hesitantly, his flow of words stopping for a brief moment. Serene could sense a break in character as he reoriented himself. She was becoming increasingly certain that this man was not who he claimed. Fortunately, her mind had just alighted on a method to test him. "Of course, my lord," Serene said. "Duladen citizens are said to be the finest fencers in all of the land, better even than Yadorians. I am certain the ladies here would be much intrigued to see a true master at work." "I am very thankful at the offer, your gracious highness," Kalu began, "but I am hardly dressed." "We will make it a quick bout, my lord," Serene said, picking up her bag and sliding out her two finest sires, the ones with sharpened points rather than simple balls. She whipped one through the air expertly as she smiled at the doula. "All right," the doula said, tossing aside his hat. "Let us have a bout, then." Serene stopped, trying to judge whether he was bluffing. She hadn't intended to actually fight him. Otherwise, she wouldn't have chosen the dangerous blades. She considered for a moment, and then, with a casual shrug, tossed him one of the weapons. If he was bluffing, then she intended to call him in a very embarrassing and potentially painful way. Kalu pulled off his bright turquoise jacket, revealing the ruffled green shirt underneath. Then, surprisingly, he fell into a fencing stance, his hand raised behind him, the tip of his sire raised defensively. "All right," Serene said, then attacked. Kalu jumped backward at the onslaught, twirling around the stunned Duke Roile as he parried Serene's blows. There were several startled cries from the women as Serene pushed through them, snapping her blade at the offending doula. Soon she emerged into the sunlight, jumping off the wooden dais and landing barefoot in the soft grass. As shocked as they were at the impropriety of the battle, the women made certain not to miss a single blow. Serene could see them following as she and Kalu moved out into the flat courtyard at the center of Roile's gardens. The doula was surprisingly good, but he was no master. He spent too much time parrying her attacks, obviously unable to do much but defend. If he truly was a member of the Duladen aristocracy, then he was one of their poorer fencers. Serene had met a few citizens who were worse than she, but on average, 3 out of 4 could defeat her. Kalu abandoned his air of apathy, concentrating solely on keeping Serene's sire from slicing him apart. They moved all the way across the courtyard, Kalu retreating a few steps with each new exchange. He seemed surprised when he stepped onto brick instead of grass, arriving at the fountain centerpiece of Roile's gardens. Serene advanced more vigorously as Kalu stumbled up onto the brick deck. She forced him back until his thigh struck the edge of the fountain itself. There was nowhere else for him to go, or so she thought. She watched with surprise as the doula leapt into the water. With a kick of his leg, he sent a splash in her direction, then leapt out of the fountain to her right. Serene's sire pierced the water as Kalu passed through the air beside her. She felt the tip of her blade strike something soft, and the nobleman let out a quiet, almost unnoticeable, yelp of pain. Serene spun, raising her blade to strike again. But Kalu was on his knee, his sire stuck point first into the soft earth. He held up a bright yellow flower to Serene. "Ah, my lady," he said in a dramatic voice, "you have found my secret. Never have I been able to face a beautiful woman in combat. My heart melts, my knees shake, and my sword refuses to strike." He bowed his head, proffering the flower. The collected women behind him sighed dreamily. Serene lowered her sword uncertainly. Where had he gotten the flower? With a sigh, she accepted the gift. They both knew that his excuse was nothing more than a sneaky method of escaping embarrassment, but Serene had to respect his cleverness. He had not only managed to avoid looking like a fool, but had impressed the women with his courtly sense of romance at the same time. Serene studied the man closely, searching for a wound. She'd been certain her blade had scratched him on the face as he jumped out of the fountain, but there was no sign of a hit. Uncertain, she looked down at the tip of her sire. There was no blood on it. She must have missed, after all. The women clapped at the show, and they began to urge the dandy back toward the pavilion. As he left, Kalu looked back at her and smiled. Not the silly, foppish smile he had used before, but a more knowing, sly smile. A smile she found strikingly familiar for some reason. He performed another one of his ridiculous bows, then allowed himself to be led away. Chapter 51. The market's tents were a bright burst of color in the center of the city. Raythan walked among them, noting the unsold wares and empty streets with dissatisfaction. Many of the merchants were from the east, and they had spent a great deal of money shipping their cargoes to Erilan for the spring market. If they failed to sell their goods, the losses would be a financial blow from which they might never recover. Most of the merchants, displaying dark Fjordel colorings, bowed their heads respectfully at his passing. Raythan had been away so long, first in Dúladel, then in Erilan, that he had almost forgotten what it was like to be treated with proper deference. Even as they bowed their heads, Raythan could see something in these merchants' eyes, an edginess. They had planned for this market for months, their wares and passage purchased long before King Iodin's death. Even with the upheaval, they had no choice but to try and sell what they could. Raythan's cloak billowed behind him as he toured the market, his armor clinking comfortably with each step. He displayed a confidence he didn't feel, trying to give the merchant some measure of security. Things were not well, not at all. His hurried call via Sion to Wyrn had come too late. Telrai's message had already arrived. Fortunately, Wyrn had displayed only slight anger at Telrai's presumptuousness. Time was short. Wyrn had indicated that he had little patience for fools, and he would never, of course, name a foreigner to the title of Yorn. Yet Raythan's subsequent meetings with Telrai had not gone well. Though he seemed to be a bit more reasonable than he had been the day he'd tossed Raythan out, the king still resisted all suggestions of monetary compensation. His lethargy to convert gave mixed signs to the rest of Erilan. The empty market was a manifestation of the Erilish nobility's confused state. Suddenly, they weren't certain if it were better to be a Dorethai sympathizer or not. So they simply hid. Balls and parties slowed. and men hesitated to visit the markets, instead waiting to see what their monarch would do. Everything hung on Telrai's decision. "It will come, Raythan," he told himself. "You still have a month left. You have time to persuade, cajole, and threaten. Telrai will come to understand the foolishness of his request, and he will convert." Yet despite self-assurances, Raythan felt as if he were at a precipice. He played a dangerous game of balance. The Aerilish nobility weren't really his, not yet. Most of them were still more concerned about appearances than substance. If he delivered Aerilan to Wyrn, he would deliver a batch of half-hearted converts at best. He hoped it would be enough. Raythan paused as he saw a flutter of movement near a tent at his side. The tent was a large blue structure, with extravagant embroidery and large wing-like pavilions to the sides. The breeze brought hints of spice and smoke. An incense merchant. Raythan frowned. He was certain he had seen the distinctive blood red of a Dorethi robe as someone ducked inside the tent. The Artiths were supposed to be in solitary meditation at the moment, not idly shopping. Determined to discover which priest had disobeyed his command, Raythan strode across the path and entered the tent. It was dark inside, the thick canvas walls blocking out sunlight. A lantern burned at one side of the tent, but the large structure was so piled with boxes, barrels, and bins that Raythan could see only shadows. He stood for a moment, eyes adjusting. There didn't seem to be anyone inside the tent, not even a merchant. He stepped forward, moving through waves of scents both pungent and enticing. Sweet sands, soaps, and oils all perfumed the air, and the mixture of their many odors left the mind confused. Near the back of the tent, he found the solitary lantern sitting beside a box of ashes, the remnants of burned incense. Raythan pulled off his gauntlet, then reached to rub the soft powder between his fingers. "The ashes are like the wreckage of your power, are they not, Raythan?" a voice asked. Raythan spun, startled by the sound. A shadowed figure stood in the tent behind him, a familiar form in Dorethi robes. "What are you doing here?" Raythan asked, turning from Dilaf and brushing off his hand, then replacing his gauntlet. Dilaf didn't respond. He stood in the darkness, his unseen face unnerving in its stare. "Dilaf?" Raythan repeated, turning. "I asked you a question." "You have failed here, Raythan," Dilaf whispered. "The fool Telrai is playing with you. You, a Yawn of Shudareth. Men do not make demands of the Fjordal Empire, Raythan. They should not." Raythan felt his face redden. "What know you of such things?" he snapped. "Leave me be, Artith." Dilaf didn't move. "You were close, I admit. But your foolishness cost you the victory." "Bah," Raythan said, brushing past the small man in the darkness, walking toward the exit. "My battle is far from over. I still have time left."
"Do you?" Dilaf asked.
Out of the corner of his eye, Raythan saw Dilaf approach the ashes, running his fingers through them.
"It has all slipped away, hasn't it, Raythan? My victory is so sweet in the face of your failure."
Raythan paused, then laughed, looking back at Dilaf. "Victory? What victory have you achieved? What?" Dilaf smiled. In the wan light of the lantern, his face pocketed with shadow, he smiled. The expression, filled with the passion, the ambition, and the zeal
that Raythan had noted on that first day so long ago was so disturbing that Raythan's question died on his lips. In the flickering light, the Artith seemed not a man at all, but a Sfrakis, sent to torment Raythan. Dilaf dropped his handful of ashes, then walked past Raythan, throwing open the tent flap and striding out into the light.
"Dilaf,"
Raythan asked, in a voice far too soft for the Artith to hear.
"What victory?"
Chapter 52.
"Ow!"
Rayodin complained, as Galadin stuck the needle into his cheek. "Stop whining," the doula ordered, pulling the thread tight. "Kerita's much better at this," Rayodin said. He sat before a mirror in their rooms at Roile's mansion, his head cocked to the side, watching Galadin sew the sword wound.
"Well, wait until we get back to Elantris, then," the doula said grumpily, punctuating the remark by sticking Rayodin again.
"No," Rayodin said with a sigh. "I've waited too long already. I can feel this one ripping a little bit each time I smile. Why couldn't she have hit me on the arm?"
"Because we're Elantrians, Sule," Galadin explained. "If a bad thing can happen to us, it will. You're lucky to escape with only this. In fact, you're lucky you were even able to fight at all with that body of yours."
"It wasn't easy," Rayodin said, keeping his head still as the doula worked. "That's why I had to end it so quickly."
"Well, you fight better than I expected."
"I had Eondel teach me," Rayodin said. "Back when I was trying to find ways to prove that my father's laws were foolish. Eondel chose fencing because he thought it would be most useful to me as a politician. I never figured I'd end up using it to keep my wife from slicing me to pieces."
Galadin snorted in amusement as he stabbed Rayodin again, and Rayodin gritted his teeth against the pain. The doors were all bolted tightly and the drapes closed, for Rayodin had needed to drop his illusionary mask to let Galadin sew. The Duke had been kind enough to board them. Roile seemed to be the only one of Rayodin's former friends who was intrigued rather than annoyed by his Kalu personality.
"All right, Sule," Galadin said, tugging the final stitch.
Rayodin nodded, looking at himself in the mirror. He had almost begun to think that the handsome Duladen face belonged to him. That was dangerous. He had to remember that he was still an Elantrian, with all the weaknesses and pains of his kind, despite the unconcerned personality he had adopted. Galadin still wore his mask. The Aeon illusions were good as long as Rayodin left them alone. Whether they were drawn in air or in mud, Aeons could be destroyed only by another Elantrian. The books claimed that an Aeon inscribed in dust would continue to function, even if the pattern was scuffed or erased. The illusions were attached to their underclothes, allowing them to change outfits each day without needing to redraw the Aeon. Galadin's illusion was that of a nondescript, broad-faced doula, an image Rayodin had found at the back of his book. Rayodin's face had been much harder to choose. "How's my personality?" Rayodin asked, pulling out the Aeon Dor book to begin recreating his illusion. "Am I convincing?" Galadin shrugged, taking a seat on Rayodin's bed.
"I wouldn't have believed you were a doula, but they seem to. I don't think you could have made a better choice anyway. Kolo?"
Rayodin nodded as he drew. The Aerilish nobility were too well known, and Serene would have immediately seen through any attempt at pretending to be from Teod. Assuming he wanted to speak Aeonic, that left only Duladen.
It had been obvious from his failed attempts to imitate Galadin's accent that he could never make a convincing member of the Dúladan underclass. Even his pronunciation of a simple word such as kolo had sent Galadin into gales of laughter. Fortunately, there were a good number of lesser-known Dúladan citizens, men who had been mayors of small towns or members of unimportant councils, who spoke flawless Aeonic. Réodin had met many such individuals, and mimicking their personality required only a sense of flamboyance and a nonchalant attitude. Getting the clothing had been a little difficult, requiring Réodin, in another illusion, to go purchase it from the Aireline market. Since his official arrival, however, he'd been able to get some better tailored outfits. He thought he played a fairly good doula, though not everyone was convinced. "I think Serene's suspicious," Réodin said, finishing the Aeon and watching it spin around him and mold to his face. "She's a bit more skeptical than most." "True," Réodin said. He intended to tell her who he was as soon as possible, but she had resisted any attempts by Kalu to get her alone. She'd even refused the letter he'd sent, returning it unopened. Fortunately, things were going better with the rest of the nobility. Since Réodin had left Elantris 2 days before, entrusting new Elantris to Kaerida's care, he had managed to wiggle his way into Aerilish high society with an ease that surprised even him. The nobles were too busy worrying about Telrai's rule to question Kalu's background. In fact, they had latched onto him with startling vigor. Apparently the sense of free-willed silliness he brought to gatherings gave the nobles a chance to laugh and forget the chaos of the last few weeks. So he soon became a necessary guest at any function. Of course, the true test was going to be getting himself into Roile and Serene's secret meetings. If he was ever going to do any good for Aerilan, he needed to be admitted into that special group. They were the ones who were working to determine the fate of the country. Galadin was skeptical about Raeodin's chances. Of course, Galadin was skeptical about everything. Réodin smiled to himself. He was the one who had actually started the meetings. It seemed ironic that he should now be forced to work to regain admittance. Kalu's face, once again masking his own, Réodin pulled on his green gloves, articles that held the illusion that made his arms seem non-Elantrian, then spun and twirled for Galadin. "And the magnificent Kalu returns." "Please, Sule, not in private. I come close enough to strangling you in public." Réodin chuckled. "Ah, what a life! Loved by all women, envied by every man." Galadin snorted. "Loved by all of the women, but one, you mean?" "Well, she did invite me to spar with her any time I wanted," Réodin said, smiling as he walked over to pull open the drapes. "Even if it was just to get another chance to impale you," Galadin said. "You should be glad she hit you on the face, where the illusion covered the wound. If she'd stabbed through your clothing, it would have been very difficult to explain why your cut didn't bleed. Kolo?" Réodin slid open the balcony door, walking out to look over Roile's gardens. He sighed as Galadin joined him. "Tell me this. Why is it that every time I meet her, Serene is determined to hate me?" "Must be love," Galadin said. Réodin laughed wryly. "Well, at least this time it's Kalu she hates, rather than the real me. I suppose I can forgive her for that. I've almost gotten to the point where I hate him, too." A knock came at the door, drawing their attention. Galadin looked at him, and he nodded. Their costumes and faces were complete. Galadin, playing the part of a servant, walked over and unlocked the door. Roile stood outside. "My lord," Raoden said, approaching with outreached arms and a broad smile. "I trust your day has been as fine as my own?"
"It has, Citizen Kalu," Roile said. "May I come in?"
"Certainly, certainly," Raoden said. "It is, after all, your house. We are so unspeakably indebted to your kindness that I know I shall never manage to repay you."
"Nonsense, citizen," Roile said. "Though, speaking of payments, you will be pleased to know that I made a good trade on those lamp mounts you gave me. I deposited your credit in an account at my bank. It should be enough to see that you live comfortably for several years at least."
"Excellent," Raoden proclaimed. "We shall immediately seek another place to reside."
"No, no," the old duke said, holding up his hands. "Stay here as long as you wish. I get so few visitors in my old age that even this small house often seems too large."
"Then we shall stay as long as you suffer us," Raoden declared with characteristically Duladan lack of decorum. It was said that the moment you invited a doula to stay, you would never get rid of him, or his family.
"Tell me, citizen," Roile said, strolling to the balcony, "where did you find a dozen lamp mounts made of solid gold?"
"Family heirlooms," Raoden said. "I pried them off our mansion walls, even as the people burned it down."
"It must have been horrible," Roile said, leaning against the balcony rail.
"Worse than horrible," Raoden said with somberness.
Then he smiled.
"But those times are over now, my lord. I have a new country and new friends. You shall become my family now."
Roile nodded absently, then shot wary eyes back at Galadin.
"I see something occupies your mind, Lord Roile," Raoden said. "Fear not to speak it. Good Dendo has been with me since I was born. He is worthy of any man's trust."
Roile nodded, turning back to look out over his estate.
"I do not mention the harsh times in your homeland indiscriminately, citizen. You said they are over now. But I fear for us, the terror is just beginning."
"Ah, you speak of the problems with the throne," Raoden said with a click of his tongue.
"Yes, citizen," Roile said. "Telraya is not a strong leader. I fear Eriolan will soon fall to Duladel's fate. We have Fjordel wolves nipping at us, smelling blood. But our nobility pretends to see nothing more than favored hounds."
"Oh, troubled times," Raoden said. "Where can I go to find simple peace?"
"Sometimes we must make our own peace, citizen."
"What do you mean?" Raoden asked, trying to keep the excitement out of his voice.
"Citizen, I hope I do not injure you when I point out that the others see you as rather frivolous."
Raoden laughed. "I hope they see me that way, my lord. I should hate to think I've been playing the fool for nothing."
Roile smiled. "I sense a wit in you that is not completely masked by your foppishness, citizen. Tell me, how did you manage to escape from Duladan?"
"I am afraid that is one secret which must remain untold, my lord," Raoden said. "There are those who would suffer dearly if their part in my escape became known."
Roile nodded. "I understand. The important part is that you survived when your countrymen did not. Do you know how many refugees came up through the border when the Republic fell?"
"I am afraid not, my lord," Raoden replied.
I was a little busy at the time.
None, Roal said. Not a single one that I know of. Yourself excluded. I hear that the Republicans were too shocked to even think of escaping.
My people are slow to act, my lord, Riordan said with upraised hands. In this case, our lax manner proved our downfall. The revolution rolled over us while we were still discussing what to have for dinner.
But you escaped.
I escaped, Riordan agreed.
You have already been through what we might have to suffer, and that makes your advice valuable, no matter what the others may think.
There is a way to escape Dulidel's fate, my lord, Riordan said cautiously, though it could be dangerous. It would involve a change in leadership.
Roal's eyes narrowed knowingly, and he nodded. Something passed between them, an understanding of the Duke's offer and Riordan's willingness.
You speak of dangerous things, Roal warned. I have been through a lot, my lord. I would not be averse to a little more danger if it provided me a means of living the rest of my life in peace.
I cannot guarantee that will happen, Roal said.
And I cannot guarantee that this balcony won't suddenly collapse, sending us to our doom. All we can do is count on luck, and our wits, to protect us.
Roal nodded.
You know the house of the merchant Kyine?
Yes.
Meet me there tonight, at sunset.
Riordan nodded, and the Duke excused himself.
As the door shut, Riordan winked at Galadin. And you thought I couldn't do it.
I'll never doubt you again, Galadin said dryly.
The secret was Roal, my friend, Riordan said, pulling the balcony door shut as he walked back into the room. He sees through most facades. But unlike Serene, his primary question is not, why is this man trying to fool me? But how can I make use of what I know?
I gave him hints, and he responded.
Galadin nodded.
Well, you're in. Now what will you do?
Find a way to put Roal on the throne instead of Tel-Rai, Riordan said, picking up a cloth and a jar of brown makeup. He smeared some of the makeup on the cloth, then tucked the cloth in his pocket.
Galadin raised an eyebrow.
And what is that? He asked, nodding to the cloth.
Something I hope I won't have to use.
Chapter 53.
What is he doing here? Serene demanded, standing at the doorway to Kyine's kitchen. The idiot Kalu sat inside, dressed in a montage of garish reds and oranges. He spoke animatedly with Kyine and Roal, and apparently hadn't noticed her arrival. Lucal closed the door behind her, then glanced toward the doula with apparent distaste. Her cousin was known as one of the wittiest, most colorful men in Kaye. Kalu's reputation, however, had quickly eclipsed even Lucal's, leaving the young merchant a bitter second.
Roal invited him for some reason, Lucal muttered.
Has Roal gone mad? Serene asked, perhaps more loudly than she should have.
What if that cursed doula is a spy?
A spy for whom? Kalu asked merrily.
I don't think your pompous king has the political acumen to hire spies. And let me assure you, no matter how much I exasperate you, princess, I bother Fjordels even more. That yawn would rather stab himself in the chest
then pay me for information.
Serene flushed with embarrassment, an action that only sent Kalu into another peal of laughter.
I think, Serene, you will find Citizen Kalu's opinions helpful, Roile said. This man sees things differently from Aerilene's, and he also has a fresh opinion of events in Kei. I seem to remember that you yourself used a similar argument when you first joined us. Do not discount Kalu's value because he happens to be a little more eccentric than you find comfortable.
Serene frowned, but allowed herself to be rebuked. The Duke's observations held weight. It would be helpful to have a new perspective. For some reason, Roile seemed to trust Kalu. She could sense a mutual respect between them. Grudgingly, she admitted that perhaps the Duke had seen something in Kalu that she hadn't. The doula had, after all, been staying with Roile for several days. Ahane was late, as usual. Shuden and Eondel spoke quietly at one end of the table, their subdued conversation a stark contrast to Kalu's vibrant narrative. Kyine had provided appetizers, crackers with some sort of creamy white glaze atop them. Despite her insistences that he not prepare dinner, Kyine had obviously been unable to let this many people congregate without giving them something to eat. Serene smiled. She doubted that other treasonous conspiracies enjoyed gourmet snacks. A few moments later, Ahane waddled in, not bothering to knock. He plopped himself down in his customary seat and proceeded to attack the crackers. "We're all here, then," Serene said, speaking sharply to interrupt Kalu. All heads turned toward her as she stood. "I trust you all have given our predicament much thought. Does anyone want to start?"
"I will," Ahane said. "Maybe Tel Rai I can be persuaded not to convert to Shudareth."
Serene sighed. "I thought we discussed this, Ahane. Tel Rai isn't debating whether or not to convert. He's waiting to see how much money he can get out of Wyrn."
"If only we had more troops," Roile said with a shake of his head. "With a proper army, we could intimidate Tel Rai. Serene, what chance is there of getting aid from Teod?"
"Not much," Serene said, sitting. "Remember, my father swore himself to Shudareth. Besides, Teod has a wonderful navy, but few ground troops. Our country has a small population. We survive by sinking our enemies before they land."
"I hear there are resistance fighters in Dooladel," Shuden suggested. "They harass caravans occasionally."
All eyes turned toward Kalu, who raised his hands, palms forward.
"Trust me, my friends, you do not want their help. The men of which you speak are mostly former Republicans like myself. They can duel one another with fine proficiency. But a Sairi isn't much good against a trained soldier, especially if he has five friends beside him. The resistance only survives because the Fjordels are too lazy to chase it out of the swamps."
Shuden frowned. "I thought they were hiding in the caves of the Duladen steppes."
"There are several pockets of them," Kalu said smoothly, though Serene detected a hint of uncertainty in his eyes.
"Who are you?" she thought, as the conversation moved forward.
"I think we should bring the people into it," Lucal said. "Tel Rai has indicated that he intends to maintain the plantation system. If we encourage the common people to our cause, they should be willing to rise against him."
"It could work," Eondel said. "Lady Serene's plan to sharecrop my peasants has given them a taste of freedom, and they've grown far more self-confident over the last few months. But it would take a great deal of time,
You don't train men to fight overnight.
Agreed, Roile said. Tell Rai I will be Direthai long before we finish, and Raythan's proclamation will be law.
I could pretend to be Direthai for a while, Lucal said, if only while I'm planning the king's demise.
Serene shook her head. If we give Shudareth that kind of foothold in Arilon, we'll never be free of it.
It's only a religion, Serene, Ahane said. I think we should focus on real problems.
You don't think Shudareth is a real problem, Ahane? Serene asked. Why don't you try and explain that to Jindo and Dúladel?
She's right, Roile said. Fjordan embraced Shudareth as a vehicle for domination. If those priests convert Arilon, then Wyrn will rule here, no matter who we put on the throne.
Then raising an army of peasants is out? Shudan asked, bringing the conversation back on topic.
Too time-consuming, Roile said. Besides, Kalu noted, I don't think you want to throw this country into war. I've seen what a bloody revolution can do to a nation. It breaks the people's spirit to fight one another. The men in the Elantra City Guard might be fools, but they are still your countrymen. Their blood would be on your hands.
Serene looked up at the comment, made without a hint of Kalu's normal flamboyance. Something about him made her increasingly suspicious.
Then what? Lucal said with exasperation. We can't fight Tel Rai, and we can't wait for him to convert. What do we do?
We could kill him, Eondel said quietly.
Well? Serene asked. She hadn't expected that suggestion to come out quite so early in the meeting.
It has merits, Kyan agreed, showing a cold dispassion that Serene had never seen in him before. Assassinating Tel Rai would solve a lot of problems.
The room fell quiet. Serene felt a bitter taste in her mouth as she studied the men. They knew what she knew. She had determined long before the meeting began that this was the only way.
Ah, one man's death to save a nation, Kalu whispered.
It seems the only alternative,
Kyan said with a shake of his head. Perhaps, the doula said, though I wonder if we aren't underestimating the people of Arilon.
We already discussed this, Lucal said. We don't have enough time to rally the peasants.
Not just the peasants, young Lucal, Kalu said, but the nobility.
Have you not sensed their hesitance to back Tel Rai? Have you not seen the discomfort in their eyes? A king with no support is no king at all.
And the guard?
Kyan asked pointedly.
I wonder if we couldn't turn them, Kalu said. Certainly they could be persuaded to see that what they have done is not right.
You had become we. Serene's brow furled. She almost had it. There was something familiar about his words.
It's an interesting suggestion, Roile said.
The guard and the nobility support Tel Rai because they don't see another alternative, Kalu explained. Lord Roile was shamed by the failed wedding, and Lady Serene was thrown into Elantris. Now, however, the embarrassment has been removed. Perhaps if we can show the guard the ultimate result of their decision, occupation by Fjordan and a virtual enslavement of our people, they will realize that they supported the wrong man. Give men an honest choice, and I believe they will choose wisely. That was it. Serene knew that faith somewhere, that pure belief in the basic goodness of all men. And when she suddenly realized where she had seen it before, she couldn't stop herself from jumping up and yelping in surprise.
Raoden cringed, immediately recognizing his mistake. He had let go of Kalu too quickly, allowing too much of his true self to show. The others hadn't noticed the change, but Serene, dear suspicious Serene, hadn't been so lax. He looked into her shocked, wide eyes and knew that she knew. Somehow, despite their short time together, she had recognized him, when his best friends could not.
"Uh-oh," he thought to himself.
"Serene?" Roael asked. "Princess, are you all right?"
Serene looked around sheepishly, standing in front of her chair. She quickly forgot her embarrassment, however, as her eyes fell on the furtive Kalu.
"No, my lord, I don't think so," she said. "I think we need a break."
"We haven't really been going that long,"
Lucal said.
Serene silenced him with a look, and no one else braved her wrath.
"A break it is," Roael said slowly.
"Good," Kyine said, rising from his seat. "I have some raggish meat wraps cooling out back. I'll go get them."
Serene was so flustered that she barely even considered chastising her uncle for preparing a meal when she had expressly told him not to. She shot Kalu a telling look, then stalked away from the table, apparently on her way to the privy. She waited in Kyine's study for a moment before the hapless impostor finally strolled around the corner. Serene grabbed his shirt and all but threw him against the wall as she pressed her face up against his.
"Spirit?" she demanded. "What in the name of gracious Domai are you doing here?"
Spirit looked to the side apprehensively.
"Not so loudly, Serene. How do you think those men would react if they discovered they'd been sitting with an Elantrian?"
"But how?" she asked, her anger turning to excitement as she realized it really was him. She reached up to wiggle his nose, which was far too long to be his real one. She was surprised when her fingers passed through the tip as if it weren't there.
"You were right about the Aeon, Serene," Spirit said quickly. "They're maps of Aerilon. All I had to do was add one line, and the entire system started working again."
"One line?"
"The chasm," Spirit explained. "It caused the Riode. It was enough of a change in the landscape that its presence needs to be reflected in the Aeons."
"It works," Serene said. Then she released his shirt and gave him a bitter punch to the side.
"You've been lying to me."
"Ow," Spirit complained. "Please, no punching. My body doesn't heal, remember?"
Serene gasped. "That didn't change when we fixed Aeon Dor?" Spirit asked.
"No. I'm still an Elantrian under this illusion. There's something else wrong with Aeon Dor."
Serene resisted the urge to punch him again. "Why did you lie to me?"
Spirit smiled.
"Oh, and you're going to try and tell me it wasn't more fun this way?"
"Well," he laughed. "Only you would consider that a valid excuse, my princess. Actually, I never got the chance to tell you. Every time I tried to approach you these last few days, you ducked away, and you ignored the letter I sent you. I couldn't just jump in front of you and drop my illusion. I actually came to Kyine's last night in the hopes I would see you in the window."
"You did?" Serene asked with a smile.
"Ask Galadin," Raoden said.
"He's back at Roile's right now, eating all of the Duke's Yadorian candy. Did you know he had a weakness for sweets?"
"The Duke or Galadin?"
"Both,"
Look, they're going to wonder what's taken us so long. Let them.